Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. This episode is part of a special mini-series produced in collaboration with Bloomberg Businessweek, bringing you sustainable finance and leadership for a changing world. I'll be hearing from some of the thought leaders speaking at the Bloomberg Businessweek Good Business Festival held at The Conduit on topics including clean air, the future of energy, reimagining cities, and sustainable supply chains.
There will be leaders who will really make the market in this transition. And then I think there will be a lot of fast followers who will come along and scale out. So it's really about working out where the economics and sustainability really add up, and then having a broader set of companies follow. And that's how I think we'll get sort of mass adoption.
My guest today is John Moore. John is CEO of Bloomberg NEF. He has 20 years' experience in building professional service firms in the financial services industry, advising clients across the US, Europe, and Asia. Prior to BNEF, John spent a decade at JP Morgan supporting their commodities business and Accenture within their financial services practice, including 2 years helping to build the Asian financial service practice. John, welcome.
Thank you, Paul.
So your professional background and experience is in finance and in consulting, working for companies like JP Morgan and Accenture. What prompted you to make the switch to BNEF and work on matters relating to the clean energy transition?
So my transition into energy was in 2008, actually, so sort of 11 years or so ago. I joined the city at Big Bang in 1986, so it was an incredibly exciting place. Big Bang was when the city of London was deregulated, so it allowed a lot of international companies to come into the market, and that's how I ended up at JP Morgan. So it was just the most interesting place to be in the sort of mid to late 80s, and I had a great 2 decades, actually. A lot of innovation was taking place, so derivatives were very new, and that was an explosive growth area. So for that time and place, that was really where the action was. By 2006, I kind of worked out that this was probably heading in ways that people were less happy with, let's say. So this is before 2007, 2008, etc. So I decided that climate actually was a similar interesting, new, and very complex area that was also going to grow in time. So that's why I got involved in sort of clean energy as a key component of the climate challenge. So it was really an interesting climate and how that whole change was going to take place, because it involves, you know, governments and companies and individuals and finance, etc. It's very complicated. And it's also very strategic. It's a long-term challenge. So it's really, that's what attracted me to this market.
So tell us about BNEF. What does BNEF do? What are your core areas of expertise? How do you help your clients and the public at large?
So at BNEF, what we try and do is look for areas of change and innovation that will have a significant impact on the future of energy. And one component of that will be around decarbonization, but there could well be others. So these are innovations that are going to change the industry. And what we try and do is focus on things that are cost-effective as well as sort of new and innovative, because you know, there's a lot of innovations that are interesting but will have sort of marginal gains. So what we really try and do is focus in on things that are going to be structurally changing the market. So wind and solar are good examples of those, but that came out of looking at a portfolio of different technologies. So nobody can predict the future, so you look at a portfolio. We looked at a portfolio of things called energy smart technologies, and within that we looked at storage, and it turns out that storage is one of these amazing growth markets. So we're now looking at transportation, so electric vehicles, mobility as a service, so things like Uber, and also AVs, so autonomous vehicles, somewhere in the future. And we're looking at that as a portfolio of change, for example. And then we're now starting to look at materials. So plastics, bioplastics, 3D printing. So those kinds of technologies and the innovations they bring, how, you know, which ones of those will have a major and structural impact on the industry and on decarbonization.
So across those portfolios, energy, transport, new materials, in areas that there will be major structural shifts, where are you most excited and optimistic? Where do you see step change, paradigm change happening? If you're going to be glass half full, yep, or an optimist, where do you see the most exciting change happen?
Yeah, I mean, we're generally optimistic in that in a decade, you can do a lot. Actually, we're just, you know, running the panel. So 30 years ago, we have 30 years until mid-century. 30 years ago, the internet hadn't been invented. So when I started work in the city, the first thing you were given was a phone book rather than, there was no email system. So 30 years ago, the internet didn't exist. Now there's 3.9 billion people on the internet. Nobody could even fathom how the world would work without the internet. So we're generally optimistic that in the next 30 years, we can come across some more of those really transformational technologies. So I think on the sort of power side, storage I already mentioned, but think software, the power of software and data has really not yet been mobilized, let's say. So I think now some of the components of the solution are there, but software has been lagging. So I think that's an incredibly interesting area of engagement on the power side. On transportation, I think, you know, the electrification of the transport system will be amazing. So it's going to be far-reaching. It will affect all of us. You know, our vehicle is one of the things that people are attached to. It's one of our biggest purchases after our house. So I think that's, again, an area where transformation is absolutely ripe for happening now. Mm-hmm. And on industry is a little bit earlier. So it's one of these hard to abate sectors. I think we've just done some research on hydrogen. So I think hydrogen is certainly one of the solutions that many, many people are looking at seriously as to how do we utilize hydrogen as a solution in the industrial context. So I think those are just some of the areas where we're seeing great opportunity for growth and innovation.
Let's double back to your comments on software. So tell us a little bit of how a few potential real-world applications of how software would change the energy sector in ways that it hasn't done so to date.
So I suppose one of the big trends in the power side will be decentralization. So you are going to have more capability. At the moment, you know, power stations are very centralized and they support consumers down at the sort of at the retail end. I think what you're going to find is many more assets down at the consumer end. So you'll have rooftop solar, you'll have stationary storage, you'll have an electric vehicle plugged into your network, which is also a battery on wheels, basically. So I think all of that together is actually an opportunity. It's going to provide a huge amount of energy production capability. And when the sun is shining, you're going to end up with more power than you can consume. So again, you're going to become a net producer of electricity. How that all fits into the system is really not been utilized yet. So whilst you can understand the potentials there, I think it's software that will unlock that. A, how all of those different energy assets work for you, and B, how you can then connect those to other people. So I think that's a huge area of opportunity and one that's just been underinvested in, and the consumer motivations behind it are not really understood. What's the value to people? In the way that, say, Uber have done for mobility, there is no equivalent in power for a consumer.
What are the trends that scare you most? Where do you think we're moving decisively in the wrong direction, and what do you think we have to do to head that off?
I mean, I think a lot of this is about education. So it's not really a trend that's moving in the wrong direction. It's just the fact that a lot of people that run, say, energy companies or transport companies have spent, you know, three decades coming up through the ranks. They know how this industry works. They have their reports. They know where to invest. But in the future, that will be different. So these are big transformations that need to take place. So I think there's an education challenge about getting facts and figures in front of people that make real decisions. So actually, we had a meeting last week with a major shipping company, and they have to decide now what kind of ships to procure. They're going to procure a number of ships. These ships will be owned for 25 years. So they really wanted to understand what will the world be like in 25 years' time, what will be the view on emissions, what will be the cost of different technologies. So I think it's really, the problem is how many people have to make those decisions today, and can we get enough information into those people so that they make wise decisions, because they lock in a lot of assets, and these assets last for many decades. So I think the real issue now is education, particularly at that senior decision-maker level. It's the same with finance, actually. There's a lot of people in finance very willing and happy and interested in investing in things that have a benefit for the climate. It's just they don't really have the information at their fingertips to make those decisions wisely. So they, too, are looking for help in the decision-making process. So I think that's one of the big challenges that means that the right decisions aren't necessarily be taken sort of across the board by the people that are making them.
You obviously have a global outlook on the structural transformations that are happening in the energy sector. In which countries do you see the most innovation and the most rapid changes that are meeting the urgency of our times? And in which countries do you think there's still a lot more that needs to be done?
So I think China is a world leader in a lot of the technology. So in solar and wind and battery storage and electric vehicles, there is huge investment going in. So I think China is a world leader in that. They have huge energy demands and they use coal, gas, renewables, all of the above. So they do have challenges of their own in terms of emissions, but in terms of building new technology kit, I think China is a world leader. And so I think that's not well understood by people, but you know, a lot of what we do in future will involve Chinese technology. I think also in India, they've set some very high targets for renewable penetration, and I think that's good. So India too is moving, which is, given the growth that's going to come in their energy demand, is important. And then I think on the US, it varies by state, but clearly California is way out there in terms of the targets they've set for net zero by 2045. And their embracement of different technologies, and clearly with, they have Silicon Valley, so they have a lot of software too. And my guess is, you know, out of there will come some of the solutions for the software challenge. The UK has set some great targets for net zero by 2050, and I know that the EU too is also looking at that. So, I think there are some good examples of different environments and different ambitions being set. I think the ones, it's really then, where do we need to catch up? There are some vast nations in Southeast Asia. So, you know, Indonesia is the fourth most populous country in the world. And we need, probably to see more from them in terms of what's their ambition, how do their industries decarbonize, etc. And my guess is there's sort of, on the oil production side, Russia, et cetera. So it's really understanding how those countries too will innovate and expand their footprint and their industrial capability to include these newer, cleaner technologies. So, but there is a lot of, certainly there's a lot of discussion that really needs to get turned into targets and ambition so that will allow people to invest.
I read your recently issued report on battery storage, and it seems that there is a economic/financial/technological revolution that is going to happen in battery storage, really paradigm shifting nature. Help to explain just to ordinary citizens what that is likely to mean. Why is there such massive developments in this space, and how that might influence or shape our daily lives?
So battery technology has been around a long time, and actually nearly everybody carries a smartphone around, and that's a lithium-ion battery. So everybody's actually familiar with lithium-ion batteries, and most people own one. The big difference has been is using lithium-ion on the transport side, so electrification of transport. And that is now overtaken. Consumer electronics used to be the big demand for lithium-ion batteries. Now electric vehicles has overtaken that. And electric vehicles is only just at the beginning of the transformation. So the volume of manufacturing capacity that's going to be built out to electrify transport is going to be vast. And that really is driving the costs further down. So lithium-ion batteries become extremely cheap. So they will then play very nicely alongside renewable energy, because renewable energy is intermittent. The sun shines and the wind blows sometimes, but not others. Therefore, storage and lithium-ion batteries will sit very nicely alongside that. So that's going to drive that into the power system too. There are many other technologies on storage as well. So there are storage batteries. There are things like flow batteries that have a longer lifetime. So for more seasonal storage, you're going to need other solutions. Even hydrogen for storage, you're going to see. So there's not just lithium-ion is one technology, but storage is going to become a key part of an intermittent renewable system, and that's why I think they're going to be so important, as well as the decarbonization of the transport system. So they're going to be used in many, many different ways. There will be new technologies that come along and innovate, but certainly the opportunities there in the next few years to see a massive scaling.
I'm sure one of your working hypotheses of your business is that the transformation that will happen in the financial sector and in capital is going to be necessary to help facilitate the move to a new green economy. And so I'd like to ask you, particularly because you referred earlier to business leaders having to make 25-year-long decisions involving a massive amount of capital deployment, that once you make that decision, you're locked in for a long time. Do you think business leaders as a whole are understand the urgency of our times and are approaching these 25-year business decisions with that framework, that we face an existential threat and they have to act accordingly? Or do you think there is still a business as usual mindset within those decision makers?
I mean, I think that's just a huge range. There are clearly some leading edge thinkers who totally understand the challenges, are baking goals into their internal targets, sustainability goals, and then are driving that through their business. So I think there are definitely some leading companies that are out there genuinely with desire to improve and driving that through their business. And then there's a whole range of other companies, you know, along that spectrum. The people we meet with, I suppose it's because of the kind of research we do, we know there's a lot of interest. We know there's a lot of desire. We very rarely meet people who would deny the science or would deny this trend. It's then a question of what does that mean for them? So there is a disparity between how existential they think this change is going to be and how serious they're going to make it. So I would say there will be leaders who will really make the market in this transition. And then I think there will be a lot of fast followers who will come along and scale out. So it's really about working out where the economics and sustainability really add up, and then having a broader set of companies follow. And that's how I think we'll get sort of mass adoption.
You participated today in a panel on the future of energy as part of our partnership with Bloomberg Business Week. Tell us what was the most interesting or surprising thing that you learnt on that panel.
I suppose the most interesting thing was on the renewable side, the need for a real brand leader, let's say. So, and actually the example that was raised actually by Sean Kingsbury was, you know, Tesla is the sort of leading light in electric vehicles. Now, there are many other people following that, but at least at a consumer level, that brand has clearly represented the shift. What's interesting is, whilst there are a number of large, successful companies investing in renewables, there isn't really a leading brand in the same way that Apple might be for an iPhone. And I thought that was pretty interesting, because I think in terms of, as we mentioned earlier, consumer adoption and decentralization, people will turn to brands that they trust to help them do that. And at the moment, there doesn't seem to be that leading light out there that in the way that maybe Amazon is for, you know, logistics or whatever. And I thought that was pretty interesting, actually, and I agree with that. I think there really is a huge opportunity for somebody to own that space. It'll be energy writ large. It won't just be how to switch your lights on and off. It'll be other attributes, other parts of your life they will help you with around, you know, mobility, heating, cooling, those kinds of things. But I think the opportunity is still out there for a major brand to take that and really own it.
And what gives you hope right now in terms of what's the most interesting technology or innovation that's out there right now that you think is just incredible in terms of breakthroughs or opportunities?
I'm not sure I would point to one technology. I think it's the realization that these are systems changes. I suppose we're seeing more of our clients really understand that any one technology within a system has limited benefit, because if the whole system doesn't change, then you won't get alignment and you won't get significant uptake. So I think the biggest shift has been in terms of people understanding that it's a portfolio of technologies. So we're seeing the most forward-thinking companies invest actually in a wide range of different technologies, because the idea is the combination of those will lead to a new system, and that new system will be great for customers and good for that business too, and work for, you know, society and for government. So I think that's probably the thing that gives me most hope, is that people are understanding that it's a systems change that needs to take place, and it's a holistic change, and they need to invest in all of those different components.
John Moore, CEO of BNEF, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations, produced in partnership with Bloomberg Business Week. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For more information on The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com. To learn more about Bloomberg Business Week, please visit businessweek.com.